I had prostate problems that were driving me nuts. I tried several different natural products. None of them worked. One day I heard about Prostagenics. It beat over 157 other prostate supplements in independent lab tests and was rated number one most powerful prostate supplement in the world. So I got some Prostagenics, and boy, am I glad I did. Now my prostate troubles are a thing of the past. I sleep like a champ. I feel like I did 20 years ago. Do yourself a huge favor. Do what I did and get yourself some Prostagenics.
Prostagenics sells for $49 in stores. But call right now because we're letting as many men as possible try Prostagenics with our free bottle offer. So call 1-800-550-4512 right now. That's 1-800-550-4512. Call 1-800-550-4512.
After being fired for, quote, inappropriate behavior toward a coworker, former A Prairie Home Companion host Garrison Keillor is considering leaving the country. Correspondent Mark Mayfield reports.
The 75-year-old humorist and fixture on public radio said in a Facebook posting, "It's astonishing that 50 years of hard work can be trashed in the morning by an accusation." Keillor says, "I think I have to leave the country in order to walk around in public and not feel accusing glances." Minnesota Public Radio Senate fired Keillor after it was notified of the allegations, while Keillor was responsible for the production of A Prairie Home Companion.
The not guilty verdict in a high-profile murder case in San Francisco is being met with anger and disappointment. Illegal immigrant Jose Garcia Zarate was acquitted of murder and manslaughter charges yesterday in connection with the death of Kate Steinle. President Trump said it was a disgraceful verdict and tweeted, quote, "No wonder the people of our country are so angry with illegal immigration." Stocks are taking a hit on Wall Street. The Dow is down more than 100 points, and the Nasdaq is off more than 70. You can find more news online at usaradio.com. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Hi, this is Wayne Allyn Root with a confession to make. I wear my blue blocker sunglasses everywhere. How good are blue blockers? First, America's astronauts using the same formula wore them in outer space. And over 20 million pairs have been sold throughout the world. 20 million! Blue blockers provide the best eye protection you can own. And you can't even break the lens with a hammer. Here's a great holiday offer. Call toll-free now to order one pair for $29.95 or two pairs for $39.95 plus shipping. The perfect Christmas gifts. Just call toll-free 800-722-7777. That's 800-722-7777.
This Sunday, there will be something pretty super up in the sky. Correspondent Elisa Z explains.
Have you ever seen a perigee syzygy? You may have known it by another name, a supermoon. The only visible supermoon of this year will be rising on Sunday. We see a supermoon when a full moon happens while the moon is at or near its closest approach to Earth in its orbit. Sunday's supermoon is expected to appear to be 7% bigger and 16% brighter than the average full moon.
Researchers are testing an Apple Watch app that might save lives. Correspondent Lisa Carter.
The Heart Study app uses the Apple Watch's heart rate sensor to detect irregular heart rhythms. People taking part in the Stanford Medicine Study will be notified by the app through the Apple Watch and their iPhones when it detects an irregular rhythm. Study participants will then be offered a free consultation with a study doctor and possibly an electrocardiogram patch for closer monitoring. Irregular heartbeat is the leading cause of stroke and the cause of 130,000 deaths in the U.S. every year.
Movie fans can party for the next week like it's 1997?
Titanic has sailed back into theaters, so you can see it on the big screen. Paramount Pictures, AMC Theaters, and Dolby Laboratories bringing the 1997 blockbuster back for 1 week. The winner of 11 Academy Awards is playing in AMC Theaters all across the U.S. For USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
I'm Ron Taylor, and this is USA Radio News.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Bye. Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
And now, it's the news.
You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair. We're speaking today with Dava Sobel. She is the author of The Glass Universe, How the Ladies of the Harvard Observatory Took the Measure of the Stars. Ms. Sobel, welcome to Now It's the News. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
So tell us, if you could, how the women that you're describing in this book came to be involved with astronomy, the Harvard Observatory, and start, if you could, with what the state of astronomy was in the mid-19th century when this project began.
Many of the professional observatories were involved in mapping the heavens, mostly for the purposes of navigation. But the Harvard Observatory had been the first one to ever take a picture of a star. And at the start of my story in the late 19th century, there was a new director in place who wanted to bring in photography, something a lot of astronomers thought was a gimmick that had no place in serious science. But he saw it as the future of astronomy, what we now call astrophotography. And he inaugurated a program to photograph the night sky all through the night, every clear night. And then he had this wealth of photographs. They were photographs on glass plates, which is why I called the book The Glass Universe. And then he needed people to study the photographs, which were so much more detailed than the view through the eyepiece of the telescope, because the plates could accumulate light over time. So objects showed up on the plates that no one had ever seen before. And he was very open-minded. He believed that women could do the work, and he gave them that chance.
It strikes me as similar in some ways to what was occurring in the space program, where women were also used in as computers a century later.
I think that was the direct outgrowth of the ladies at Harvard, because they set the precedent. While there had always been computers working at observatories, and I mean computer as a job description, not a machine,
right,
those people were usually men. And then at Harvard, they were mostly women. And so they are in the direct lineage to the hidden figures at Langley and also the rocket girls at the Jet Propulsion Lab.
Interesting. We're speaking with Dava Sobel, the author of The Glass Universe. What was the work like for these women? How did this project start, and who were some of the women who became involved in it?
There were several kinds of work. One was to look at the plates and try to figure out the different brightness of all of the stars on any given plate, and there could be hundreds, even 1,000 stars on a plate. So it was extremely time-consuming, tedious work, required good eyesight, patience, good judgment. Another project was to look at the plates that showed the starlight pass through a prism. So the light of each star would spread out into a little pattern covering the colors of the rainbow. in black and white, but still the various colors contained in light and markings that show up in the light pattern. And they actually built a classification system for the stars based on those patterns, and that system is still in use today. Another woman discovered many variable stars, stars that changed their brightness over time, and used them to build a distance scale, a yardstick for measuring large distances in space, another innovation that is still in use today.
What were the backgrounds of these women, and how did they come to be drawn into the work at the observatory?
Well, the first ones were actually born into it or married into it. At Harvard, the residence of the director was part of the observatory building. So he just corralled his family and turned over computing work to his wife, his daughters, sisters, and they performed very well. So from there, it was an easy next step to bring in women who were not part of the family. And it was just a fact of life that it was cheaper to hire women, as it still is, unfortunately. So for the price of one male computer or assistant astronomer, you could have two or even three women. So there was an economic advantage as well. At first, they had only a high school education, but they were good with numbers, and once shown what needed to be done, they could do the work. As time went on, and the women's colleges were, many of the women's colleges were established in the 1870s, so the graduates coming out of those places would be drawn to the work at the observatory. And they came in, and also women who were college graduates sometimes just volunteered on their own to do some work, make observations, and send those to Harvard because the director was so willing to include them.
To what degree did these women's involvement change the way that this science was approached? You mentioned a couple of instances in which their techniques or observations still hold as core parts of the way that astronomy is done. Did that have an impact in the immediate succeeding generations as far as the Harvard Observatory goes? What kinds of changes, especially in terms of like staff and personnel, were made in their wake?
It had an impact immediately. The classification system was one of many that were in use at that time, and astronomers felt the need to come to agreement so they could talk to each other and be using the same classification language. So the system that was developed by the women at Harvard gained acceptance first all over the United States and then around the world at international meetings. So the women engaged in that work could see in their own lifetimes the impact that the work had. Is that what you meant, or did I misunderstand your question?
That's part of what I meant, and I guess also to what degree did their presence impact the way that things changed in terms of women being at Harvard and in research?
Women weren't really at Harvard. They were at the Harvard Observatory.
Right.
Because at the time of this story, Harvard was an all-male school.
Right.
But the observatory had a degree of separation from the university. So the director could hire women and could even include instruction for women. Some of the astronomers would go and teach at an institute that eventually became Radcliffe College. But for the most part, they stayed separate. The women who came in who were college-educated came from places like Wellesley and Vassar and Mount Holyoke, the very early women's colleges.
You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair.
For more information on Now It's the News, go to nowitsthenews.com.
This is a special alert to consumers who owe back taxes to the IRS.
Due to the financial hardship consumers are facing during the decline in the U.S. economy, the Internal Revenue Service has made it easier to settle tax problems. An open phone line has been established by National Tax Relief. Grab a pen or put this number in your cell phone, but call 1-800-210-0311 today. That's 1-800-210-0311. When you call, you'll get information and see if you qualify. If you owe back taxes to the IRS and can't afford to pay them back, there's no need to fear anymore. You may qualify for a program that could settle your tax problems and save you money. For free information and to see if you qualify, call National Tax Relief today at 1-800-210-0311. That's 1-800-210-0311. 1-800-210-0311.
Mike Hewitt here with a bit of an enigma. High school students at a school in Indiana march down the hallway proudly carrying a large banner which reads, "Trump is the symptom, capitalism is the disease, socialism is the cure." Meanwhile, filmmaker Horowitz conducts a test at UCL Berkeley. Standing on campus waving a U.S. flag offering pro-American words, he's taunted with vulgar and anti-American shouts from nearly all that pass by. By comparison, he waves an ISIS flag and talks about the defense of ISIS, and he receives praise. Lincoln said the philosophy of the classroom of one generation will be the philosophy of government in the next. Given that truism, does our educational system have our young on the path we want for their future? It's an enigma to me that something so obvious is being ignored by so many. Folks, we've got to stop it. For more common sense, visit themikehewittshow.com.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Are you in business, not a member of the chamber? Come to the Hunterdon County Chamber Expo to see what it's all about and meet other business owners. Enjoy the restaurant showcase and enter to win the door prize just for business entries. The Chamber offers special benefits for new memberships during the Expo. So join us at Next Level Arena on Case Boulevard in Flemington on Thursday, November 9th from 2 to 7 p.m. Don't miss it.
This is Tony Clark, Para Planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
And now, it's the news.
We're speaking with Davis Obel, the author of The Glass Universe. The ladies of the Harvard Observatory took the measure of the stars. And to what degree
were... I think you were asking, how did they change
yeah.
the way astronomy was done? Certainly, other observatories became aware of the work of the women, and some others also began hiring women. But it didn't take root everywhere, and it didn't continue smoothly to the present day.
Were they acknowledged for their work in their own time?
Yes, they were. They published their findings under their own names, which is such a surprise to people, because there's a myth. People who have heard of them have often heard a myth that they were not given credit, or that the work was published under the name of one of the men at the observatory, and it's just not true. You can go back to the original publications, and there they are, all credited, and often the director would put a preface on a paper and say, list the names of all the women who'd been involved, even the ones who had played just a minor role in that particular project. Still, he would give their names and say what the contribution had been. And they became known that way through the professional literature and respected, and were members of professional organizations. Part of the story in this book is how the professional group got established, what we now call the American Astronomical Society. And they were members of it. One of the women was even an officer. So they had, they really had tremendous satisfaction of being respected and accepted, both.
Is there one of these women whose story stands out to you the most in terms of encapsulating how important their presence was at the Harvard Observatory?
Yes. There are a few. Let me just land on Wilhelmina Fleming, who started at the observatory as a domestic servant. But Pickering realized how intelligent she was.
Now, Pickering being the head of the observatory, correct?
I'm sorry, yes. Pickering was the director. And recognized how smart she was and just moved her into the observatory. The reason she had taken the maid's job, she was a Scottish immigrant who had come here as a young bride, but then found herself alone and pregnant and therefore desperate. So she'd taken this job, but now found herself doing mathematics work, astronomy work, looking at plates. And then Pickering and his wife helped her go home to Scotland to have her baby in the company of her mother and grandmother. And she was so grateful that she named the baby for him, and then came back and worked at the observatory for the rest of her life. She created the first classification system for the stars. She became the first woman to hold a university title at Harvard. So even though the observatory was separate, she got a university title as the curator of astronomical photographs. And as a professional woman, she managed to bring her son to this country, and she put him through MIT, and he became a mining engineer. Wow. Yeah.
So that was the kind
of accomplishment and success that could be achieved there.
So the person upon whom modern astronomical classification was founded is a female single mom who was an immigrant.
Right. But her system was later modified by some of the other women whose stories are perhaps not as dramatic but equally interesting. And although Mrs. Fleming arranged the stars in alphabetical order, a later classifier named Annie Jump Cannon scrambled the order because of different patterns that she noticed in the starlight. And so instead of going A, B, C, etc., they became O, B, A, F, G, K, M. And generations of Astronomy 101 students have learned that order with the mnemonic, "Oh, be a fine girl or guy, kiss me."
It brings me back to my days of the Kingdom, Phylum, you know, killing poor Charles, our fingers got sticky, and all those fun mnemonics from my various science classes over the years. But it's a fascinating story, and Davis Sobel, thank you for bringing it to us. She's the author of The Glass Universe, How the Ladies of Harvard Observatory Took the Measure of the Stars. Thank you so much for telling the story, and thank you for being on Now It's the News.
My pleasure, both.
And now, while you're continuing to digest all of those leftovers this Thanksgiving weekend, let's listen to a piece of political theater that we can all agree on, President Donald Trump's pardoning of the Thanksgiving turkey.
It was 70 years ago that the National Turkey Federation first presented the National Thanksgiving Turkey to President Harry Truman, who, I might add, did not grant the pardon. He refused. He was a tough cookie. Today, I'm going to be a much nicer president. Over the past 10 months, Melania and I have had the pleasure of welcoming many, many special visitors to the great White House. We've hosted dozens of incredible world leaders, members of Congress, and along the way, a few very strange birds. But we have yet to receive any visitors quite like our magnificent guest of honor today, Drumstick. Hi, Drumstick. Oh, Drumstick, I think, is going to be very happy. I'm pleased to report that unlike millions of other turkeys at this time of the year, Drumstick has a very, very bright future ahead of him. Drumstick was raised on Carl and Charlene's turkey farm in Douglas County, Minnesota, with the help of five young women from the Douglas County 4-H chapter who are here with us today. And I want to say, great work. Where are they? Please stand. Great job you've done. 4-H. That's great. Thank you. Upon being pardoned, Drumstick and his friend Wishbone will live out their days at Gobbler's Rest. Beautiful place. It's custom built. It's an enclosure on the campus of Virginia Tech. Tremendous school. There they'll join Tater and Tot, the two turkeys pardoned last year by President Obama. As many of you know, I have been very active in overturning a number of executive actions by my predecessor. However, I have been informed by the White House counsel's office that Tater and Tot's pardons cannot, under any circumstances, be revoked. So we're not going to revoke them. So Tater and Tot, you can rest easy.
You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair.
For more information on Now It's the News, go to nowitsthenews.com.
Get to the chopper!
This report is brought to you by Herbalife. Year after year, the National Institute of Health reports, the average American gains about a pound around the holiday season. It may not seem like much, but over the course of a lifetime, around a pound a year can really add up. According to Dr. John Agwunobi, former Assistant Secretary of Health for the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and Chief Health and Nutrition Officer for Herbalife Nutrition, creating opportunities to eat healthy foods during the holidays and limiting candy, sugar-sweetened beverages, and fast food can go a long way to living a healthier and happier life. So, to help satisfy sweet tooth cravings with a tasty, nutritious snack option, this holiday season, Herbalife Nutrition introduced Protein Bites, fun-sized, on-the-go treats with 4 grams of protein and no artificial sweeteners. Remember, the holiday season doesn't have to be a detriment to your health goals. With some simple planning and healthy snacks, you can enjoy the holidays and stay on track for the new year. For more information, visit www.herbalife.com.
USA Radio News with Ron Taylor.
Sexual harassment scandals are continuing to rock Capitol Hill. It was revealed today that Congressman Blake Farenthold settled a sexual harassment claim lodged by a former employee for $84,000. The revelation represents the first taxpayer-funded settlement of its kind that has so far been made public. The settlement came after the Texas Republican's former communications director, Lauren Green, brought a complaint against the congressman for harassment and discrimination. A new report says top NBC executives received complaints about Matt Lauer and did nothing.
The New York Post says women did complain about Lauer's behavior, but it was all brushed under the carpet long before he was fired for harassment. In addition, it says some of Lauer's co-hosts were putting on a show when they acted shocked regarding reports of his sexually inappropriate behavior. One female staffer said they feared Matt and the repercussions it would have on their careers if they complained because Matt controlled the show. Lisa G., New York.
You're listening to USA Radio News.
Hi, my name is Kip Herridge, and I'm the founder of the Vertical Research Advisory, or VRA. After 15 years on Wall Street, I founded the VRA in 2003, my daily investment newsletter that's been crushing the market for 14 years. I tell you what to buy and when to sell and take profits, and I only target stocks that have the ability to rise by 50% or more. For the first time, we're offering a free two-week membership. Simply go to VRAinsider.com. You also get my new book, Crash Proof Prosperity, Becoming Wealthy in the Age of Trump. Join us now at VRAinsider.com.
Hi, this is Wayne Allyn Root with a confession to make. I wear my blue blocker sunglasses everywhere. How good are blue blockers? First, America's astronauts using the same formula wore them in outer space. And over 20 million pairs have been sold throughout the world. 20 million! Blue blockers provide the best eye protection you can own. And you can't even break the lens with a hammer. Here's a great holiday offer. Call toll-free now to order one pair for $29.95 or two pairs for $39.95 plus shipping. The perfect Christmas gifts. Just call toll-free 800-722-7777. That's 800-722-7777.
And now, it's the news.
You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair. My guest today is Rutger Bregman. He is the author of Utopia for Realists, How We Can Build the Ideal World. And I'd like to start by reading a section from his book called George and Jane. Meet George and Jane Jetson. They're an upstanding couple who live with their two kids in a spacious apartment in Orbit City. He's got a job as a digital index operator at a large company. She's a traditional American homemaker. George is plagued by nightmares about his job, and who could blame him? He is tasked with pushing a single button at intervals, and his boss, Mr. Spacely, short, rotund, and impressively mustachioed, is a tyrant. "Yesterday, I worked two full hours," George complains, after the umpteenth nightmare. His wife, Jane, is appalled. "Well, what does that Spacely think he's running? A sweatshop?" So, my first question, Rutger Bregman, is how close are we to that vision of the future that came out of 1950s and 1960s America?
Well, not very close, I'm afraid. It's pretty fascinating, actually. If you go back in history, in the 40s, in the 50s, in the 60s, almost all the economists and sociologists and all the experts predicted that we would be working less and less and less, and that we would have a very short working week in the future. Actually, John Maynard Keynes, the great economist, predicted a working week of about 15 hours in 2030. And this is indeed from the Jetsons, a very popular series back then. But it hasn't come true.
And yet, haven't I heard even the founders of Google, among others, say that this is the direction that we should be going, shorter work week? If there are such powerful people behind it, what is stopping us from achieving at least that part of utopia?
Mm-hmm. Well, there are basically two explanations. So in the 1980s, since the 1980s, we've been working more and more, especially in the U.S., by the way. And what's fascinating is that most people think that the explanation is consumerism. So we keep on buying stuff that we don't need to impress people we don't like. And for a long time, I thought that that must be true, that that is the explanation. But then I came across an essay by David Graeber, an anthropologist, who says, well, there's one problem with the explanation, because who's making all that crap that we're buying? I mean, it's mostly wage slaves in Bangladesh and robots, right? So we're not doing it. And then he has this fascinating essay with the title on the phenomenon of, sorry, here comes a very scientific term, jobs. And actually, it was, I think, last year when the first poll was published. This was in the UK, where they found that 37% of British workers think they have a job that doesn't need to exist. And I think this is the explanation. Nowadays, we've got millions and millions of jobs of people basically sending emails to each other, writing reports that no one reads, being some kind of consultant, vision manager, whatever. That's not very necessary. And it's not me saying it. It's the people themselves saying it. So I think that's the explanation why we don't have the 15-hour work week yet.
I cannot tell you the number of times I've heard other people express that, or that I felt, or that I felt it myself. And
well, what's often funny actually is what I discovered during, for example, during lectures when I tell about this phenomenon, and I say, well, a third of all jobs are useless, and mostly people answer, no, it's not a third, it's more. It's got to be more.
Yeah, and I wonder if we've reached that point. You would think that at some stage we would just say, okay, this is not really working. Let's just shift things over. And yet there's this sort of self-enforcing mentality that we have to be working, that we have
exactly.
to be progressing and working in a particular way. And it seems ingrained in us culturally. Perhaps this is just a Western phenomenon, and the sort of work ethic that dogs us, that if we're not working in the way that we traditionally envision it, that we're somehow failing. And how does that prevent us from getting to a place where we might not have to be putting in a ridiculous number of hours every day and every week?
Well, I think that the problem is that we have a completely outdated definition of work. So there are many people working in jobs, putting in very long hours and earning great salaries, but at the end of the day, you give them one beer or maybe two, and they'll admit that their job is completely useless. Well, there's a lot of unpaid work, you know, volunteers work, caring for our kids, caring for our elderly, doesn't add to GDP, but it's incredibly useful. So in the book, I tell the story of a strike of garbage men in 1968 that happened in New York, because it's a very easy way to find out if you have a job, right? Just stop doing your job and see what happens. And generally what we see when garbage men go on strike is after 6 days, it's a complete disaster. So the emergency state had to be declared, and you know the garbage men won because their job is really, really useful, not a job.
Right.
But then I wondered, has it ever happened that, for example, the bankers went on strike? And in all of world history, I could find only one example. This was in Ireland, 1970. And this strike went on for 6 months. and nothing much happened, actually. So the economy just kept growing. Businesses kept operating. And after 6 months, the bankers came back and said, all right, we'll go back to work again.
That almost seems to be the opposite result of what Ayn Rand posited in her book, that if the ruling classes went on strike, that society would fall apart. In fact, it seems to be that somebody gave a strike and nobody bothered to come.
Exactly. I do think that Ayn Rand was onto something, that meritocracy is a valuable idea, that you should be paid according to what you contribute. Mm-hmm. But the thing is that we have got a huge amount of people, corporate lawyers, bankers, that actually destroy wealth. And if we would be paying them the true value that they're creating, then they'll probably would have negative salaries. And that's not just me saying that. I mean, the International Monetary Fund or the Bank of International Settlements, not quite left-wing think tanks. I mean, they've got recent reports that show that when a financial sector becomes too big, it starts destroying wealth. And Western countries are now way past the point.
We're speaking with Rutger Bregman, who is the author of Utopia for Realists. It actually almost seems sometimes that there's a direct relationship to how much someone is paid and how destructive that is to the society, almost a form of like psychological compensation, if you will.
Exactly, exactly. So that's why I think we need to completely rethink what work actually is. And this is also where the other idea in my book of a universal basic income comes in, because that will give everyone the freedom to decide for themselves what and how they want to contribute to society. You know, many people, millions of people are nowadays stuck in poverty, and also millions of people are stuck in useless jobs. Now, it's an incredible waste of human potential. Just also think of how many brilliant entrepreneurs and scientists or writers are now withering away in poverty, or how many young people are studying a subject that's not very interesting at all simply because they think they have to earn money. There's this great quote from a former math whiz working at Facebook who lamented that the great minds of my generation are thinking about how to make people click ads.
Right.
And I think that's very true. I mean, there's so much young talent that, you know, just 30 years ago would have gone and worked maybe as a scientist or a researcher and is now thinking of very destructive financial products that only destroy wealth, or working for ad companies like Google and Facebook. Now, I think that especially right now in the 21st century, we need real innovation, you know? We want to go to Mars. We want to cure for cancer. We want to tackle climate change. We can't afford all this waste.
Mm-hmm. We have to take a quick break, but we'll be back in a moment with Rutger Bregman, the author of Utopia for Realists. You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair.
For more information on Now It's the News, go to nowitsthenews.com.
Attention business owners and independent contractors. This is a money-saving message from Tax Mediation Services. If your business owes $20,000 or more in taxes, we can help you today. Listen, dealing with the IRS is no picnic. It's an intimidating and extremely stressful process, and you don't want to go it alone. Our attorneys know every law, every tax break, and every possible opportunity to help you resolve and reduce your tax debt. And if you owe more than $20,000, you may be at the top of their hit list. So don't take your tax debt lightly, because it will not go away on its own. The IRS can seize your bank accounts, your home, and even shut down your business. Call our tax experts today at 1-800-709-2413 and let us deal with the IRS while you focus on your business. That's 1-800-709-2413. Again, that's 800-709-2413.
Hi, I'm Joe Peters. Buying or selling a property can be one of the most expensive undertakings you face in your lifetime, and selecting the right realtor to help you through this process can dramatically affect your success or your failure. I have personally helped hundreds of buyers and sellers through this process in achieving their dreams and goals in 100 in Somerset County areas over the past 10 years. I believe that this experience should be a smooth, seamless one for you and not a roller coaster ride. But the best judgment as to whether or not I deliver this to my customers is their reactions in their own words.
One of the things we liked about Joe was that he would return calls within minutes if he wasn't able to pick up.
You know, Joe guided us through the process of selling our home and made a complicated transaction appear seamless.
How do I accomplish this? By approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, I try to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them my own. Then, I go out and take the mass amounts of data that we have and distill them down to a few understandable action points to be considered. Finally, I control the entire process through technology to ensure that we're not going to hit any speed bumps along the way. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let me show you how to take my level of professional expertise and put it to work for you in achieving your real estate goals and dreams. I can be reached at 908-238-0118. Thanks for your time.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
And now, it's the news.
You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair, and we're speaking with Rutger Bregman, the author of Utopia for Realists.
Tell us more about how the universal basic income would actually work, because this is something that I personally have heard of in the last several years come up as a practical explanation. I believe that Switzerland had some kind of vote in which they at least recently rejected it. But this is is not actually something new in history. It actually is something that was proposed, in fact, under, of all administrations in the United States, the Nixon administration.
Yeah, and this is a fascinating episode in American history, almost forgotten actually. At the end of the 60s, almost everyone believed that some form of basic income was going to be implemented in the U.S. quite soon. So Milton Friedman, the neoliberal economist, was in favor of it, but also Martin Luther King or John Kenneth Galbraith, the very quite leftist economist. Mm-hmm. And Nixon thought, well, let's just do it then. If everyone thinks this is a good idea, let's go. And his proposal for a modest basic income went through the House twice, actually, but it was killed in the Senate by the left because they wanted a higher basic income. It's a really crazy history, actually.
I just wonder, there is, and I'm sure you see this in Europe as well, but in the United States, there is just such resistance to the idea of giving people, quote unquote, free money without any sort of work attachment. I mean, you even see in the recent effort to put forward a replacement to Obamacare, what they were trying to do at the last moment was attach more work requirements to it, and that seems to be a default in the United States, where you have there's got to be work, otherwise there's some sort of shame or horror attached to it. And yet, if you look at the actual way in which it functions economically, that's not the case. It's actually far more efficient.
Yeah, and I think it's important to remember that every milestone of civilization, you know, the end of slavery, democracy, equal rights for men and women, it was all utopian fantasy once. Oscar Wilde, you know, the Irish poet, wrote at the end of the 19th century is that progress is the realization of utopias. Now, the problem nowadays is that we don't have these utopian visions anymore, that we've achieved a lot in the past. We don't really have an idea of where we want to go next. I think this is also the problem with the modern left, so they only know what they're against, basically against everything, you know, against austerity, against the establishment, against homophobia, against racism, blah, blah, blah. Now, I'm not saying I'm not against all those things, but you also need to be for something to have an idea of where you want to go. You know, Martin Luther King, he didn't say, I have a nightmare. He said, I have a dream. So what is our dream of today? And, you know, I'm a historian. So what you see happening time and time again in history is that things that are first seem unrealistic become real. You know, the whole idea of Donald Trump as a president was completely unrealistic just 2 years ago. And now here we are. So it works both ways, I guess.
We're speaking with Rutger Bregman, who is the author of Utopia for Realists. Do you suppose that, as you say, Trump unthinkable a year or two ago? Could it swing in the other direction if a Bernie Sanders type administration could come into place? Is that possible? Could we see that dramatic a swing, even though what you're putting forward in terms of universal basic income, a shorter work week, is almost unthinkable in the current political environment in the U.S.?
Yeah, well, technically, it's more than possible. So we know, for example, that if we want to completely eradicate poverty in the U.S., that would be about $175 billion, which is a quarter of the country's military spending, less than a percentage point of GDP. So really affordable. Actually, the cost of child poverty, for example, are $500 billion. So it's cheaper just to eradicate poverty than to manage the symptoms of it. So I think that technically it's perfectly possible. What we now need to do is to develop a story around it and a language and to keep on proposing this idea until, you know, what's now seemed completely crazy may seem quite realistic in the future. This also happened in the 60s. You know, at the beginning of the 60s, no one believed in basic income. At the end of the 60s, everyone thought it was going to be implemented. That's what real politics looks like.
What do you see in terms of people trying to implement this in a practical way? What attempts have been made so far? Are there guidelines are there examples in the last 10 or 20 years where people have tried to put this forward? Mm-hmm. Switzerland, for example. What happened there? What failed, and what can we learn from that?
Well, just 4 or 5 years ago, no one anywhere in the Western world knew, or pretty much no one knew, what basic income even was. So what happened in Switzerland was actually a huge success. 25% of all the Swiss voted in favor of a basic income, while just four or five years ago, no one even knew what it was. Hmm. And remember, in the 50s, the Swiss also voted against another completely crazy utopian idea, and that was the women's right to vote. Right. And 20 years later, they voted in favor of it. So I think actually it's a pretty good sign that if the Swiss are against something, then 20 years later, we may all have a universal basic income. Right. But actually, we're living now in the golden age of basic income experiments. So actually, it's a center right government in Finland is experimenting with it. A conservative senator in Canada is pushing a basic income experiment there. There are a lot of people in Silicon Valley interested in the idea, and a huge experiment has also just started in Kenya. This is an idea that's really conquering the world right now.
We're speaking with Rutger Bregman, the author of Utopia for Realists. What do you think are the most practical steps to take in order to achieve some of these ends, especially the universal basic income and a shorter work week?
I think the first thing that we need to do is experiment more. You know, every company does like hundreds or thousands of experiments every day, a modern company like Amazon, for example. Mm-hmm. But governments are very afraid to experiment. While, for example, our systems of Social Security are completely outdated, they're really expensive, they don't work, don't get people into jobs, and are quite humiliating sometimes. So let's just do more experiments, see what works better. We know already from history, for example, fascinating experiment or in Canada show that if you just eradicate poverty, then healthcare costs will go down, crime will go down, kids perform better in school, mental health complaints go down, and people don't work any less. I mean, we can have like really long debates about this idea. What will happen if you just give people basic income? Right. Will they be lazy or not? Well, let's just try and see. If it doesn't work, let's think of something else. But I think we already have a mountain of evidence that this is a very hopeful direction of thought, and let's see where that will take us.
Especially in an era where there's so much fake news abounding and where people live in their own information bubbles, it is so difficult, probably more difficult than I've ever seen it, to get through to someone who is convinced that if you give someone money, they are automatically going to become lazy and fall into a state of decrepitude. You talked earlier about crafting stories around how this might come into being. What do you think are the stories? What do you think are the arguments that we need to be forming? Not for not for practical technocrats, not for people who are well educated, but for ordinary working people who want to see it have an impact on their lives, and yet are often trapped in these repeated stories about how work is the only solution, and there's no escaping that, and any deviation from that will bring all manner of horrors.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that we should see a basic income as the sort of the crowning achievement of capitalism. Capitalism is all about innovation, right? About taking risks. That's what the American dream is also about. Now, if you give people basic income, then for the first time in history, everyone will have the opportunity to decide for themselves what to do with their lives. Now, that's what real freedom looks like. And because it's universal, there's no stigma attached. Everyone gets it. You know, whether you're rich or poor, employed or unemployed, doesn't matter. And it's unconditional. So no one's going to tell you what you have to do for it. No one's going to tell you what you have to do with it. It's not traditional, paternalistic, bureaucratic type of government policy. I think that's the kind of language that you need to develop around it. What I often try to do is develop or defend progressive ideas with a more right-wing language.
Interesting. And I observe also that many on the right, including Charles Murray, have put forward similar ideas, and you talk about, of course, Milton Friedman supporting the idea of
my generation is completely fed up with this old political dividing line between the left and the right. You know, the ideas in my book really move beyond that. Universal basic income is a great example. It will give you a quite small government in terms of paternalism, but a larger government in terms of giving everyone the opportunity to make something of their lives and eradicating poverty for the first time in history. It's really a completely different direction of thought.
We've been speaking with Rutger Bregman. He is the author of Utopia for Realists, How We Can Build the Ideal World. Mr. Bregman, thank you so much for spending the time today.
Thanks for having me.
That's all the time we have this week on Now It's the News. Now It's the News was created and produced by Derek Blair. For more information, go to nowitsthenews.com. Follow us on Twitter at @NowItsTheNews. And until next week, I remain yours truly, Derek Blair.
Happy Trails!
Have you written a book and want to get it published? Then we suggest you call Page Publishing at 1-800-658-8202 immediately. That's 1-800-658-8202. Page Publishing is looking for authors of all types of books. And unlike most publishers, Page Publishing will take the time to review each and every book submitted to us. And we will give you our feedback. And if we like what we read, we'll get your book into bookstores and for sale online at Amazon, the Apple iTunes Store, Barnes & Noble, and other outlets. We handle everything: editing, cover design, copyright protection, printing, publicity, and distribution. So if you've written a novel, children's book, cookbook, inspirational work, poetry, or biography, and want to get it published, then you need to call Page Publishing and do it immediately. Call 1-800-658-8202 now for your free author submission kit. That's 1-800-658-8202. Again, for your free author submission kit, call 1-800-658-8202. That's 1-800-658-8202. Your road to fame and fortune could very well start with a simple phone call. Call Page Publishing at 1-800-658-8202 for your free author submission kit.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Ron Taylor.
Sexual harassment scandals are continuing to rock Capitol Hill. It was revealed today that Congressman Blake Farenthold settled a sexual harassment claim lodged by a former employee for $84,000. The revelation represents the first taxpayer-funded settlement of its kind that has so far been made public. The settlement came after the Texas Republican's former communications director, Lauren Green, brought a complaint against the congressman for harassment and discrimination. A new report says top NBC executives received complaints about Matt Lauer and did nothing.
The New York Post says women did complain about Lauer's behavior, but it was all brushed under the carpet long before he was fired for harassment. In addition, it says some of Lauer's co-hosts were putting on a show when they acted shocked regarding reports of his sexually inappropriate behavior. One female staffer said they feared Matt and the repercussions it would have on their careers if they complained because Matt controlled the show. Lisa G., New York.
You're listening to USA Radio News.
Hi, I'm Wayne Allyn Root. I was one of the biggest critics of Obama in the national media. Suddenly, I was under massive IRS attack. So I hired Sam Landis. Sam did an amazing job. We won twice. I didn't owe a penny. Thank you, Sam Landis. Many of you have IRS problems, and you've spent thousands with non-lawyer tax resolution firms. Do yourself a favor. Call Sam Landis for a free consultation. Trust me, Sam Landis is the best. Sam saved my life. Call Sam at 800-WE-HELP-YOU with the letter U. That's toll-free, 800-WE-HELP-YOU with the letter U. 800-WE-HELP-YOU.
To most, the holidays sound something like this. But when you have a million things to do, the holidays can sound much different. Fortunately, Staples has the latest electronic gifts, like Bluetooth headphones and speakers, to streaming devices and smart home solutions.
Google Play holiday music.
Even board games like Monopoly. Staples has great gift ideas that will bring a smile to everyone on your list. Staples. More holiday fun, less holiday hassles.
Walmart is yanking a T-shirt it's been selling online that advocates lynching journalists. USA's Chris Barnes has the story.
Walmart says it was made aware on Wednesday of a shirt on its Walmart.com site that's being sold by a third-party seller that includes the words Rope Tree Journalist, Some Assembly Required. The retailer pulling the shirt after it was alerted by a Press Freedom Association that it was the only major retailer selling it. The Radio Television Digital News Association saying at least 48 journalists have been killed around the world so far this year alone.
The House Ethics Committee is taking action to crack down on sexual harassment. Committee Chair Susan Brooks sent a letter to the Office of Compliance, which handles harassment complaints. In the letter, Brooks asked for information on all claims of sexual harassment or misconduct against House members and their staff. Representative John Conyers is facing calls to resign after reports that taxpayer funds were used for a settlement for a woman who claimed she was fired for refusing him. This is USA Radio News.
Lumber Liquidators Cyber Week flooring deals are going on now. Get a deal and get it done with easy to install laminate for just 59 cents. Or worry-proof your home for the holidays with waterproof engineered vinyl plank on...